Bug session number 13559, reel 4.
Colonel Bienzel to reel 4. Can you tell me more about this hippo organization, please?
Yes. It was Danish support to the Gestapo. Just one. And it was normally, I guess it was only for guarding of certain headquarters, factories, and important places. But later on, it was enlarged, and they got also Gestapo work. In fact, they started to make investigations and to make killings. And in fact, it was people who normally should have been in prison for the rest of their life on account of the criminal action they had done before the war. But it was really bad people. They fitted very well into the Gestapo and their methods. So, in fact, you had the summer corps and rear guards. And the summer corps were more or less dissolved and entered into the hippos. So, in fact, you had only the Gestapo and the German police, security police also, had nothing to do with Gestapo. And then you had the hippos. And fortunately, the security people, German security police, had nothing to do with Gestapo, and in fact, they were fighting each other for information, so you were happy that they couldn't cooperate on account of the one place might have the information the other place needed. So that was a lucky situation. I would say that the Danish support from Gestapo probably made the worst thing in Denmark, the worst, the most brutal, most, unbelievable thing to people and to places.
What kind of Danish people helped the Germans in this way?
Criminals. In fact, it were criminals. I guess some few might have been believing idealist or something, but most of them just for money and excitement and to be able to make the criminal actions without getting any sanction therefore. So, right, bad people. But of course, Gestapo had certain boons even and some prominent leaders who came to Denmark to punish us and making these Tivoli sabotage, we call it, and also in Odense they burned the mass, they killed Kai Munk, the poet Kai Munk, and some other prominent people in Denmark. But they came and did it, and then they went away again. But of course, we had some out of that. It means that the opposition against the Germans were stronger and stronger the more they made to us. So that was an advance. You see?
Yes. But after the war, did you give evidence in court against collaborators who were guilty of crime?
That's an enormous problem. You see, we had all expected that after the war we could get all these people to court and to punish them and to, in fact, make a kind, not revenge, but very close to. But it didn't happen so. About 16 or 17 were executed after a core decision. But later on, most of them were set free after a few years, or the worst after 5 or 6 years, set free. And the first government was a compromise between the underground and the old politician. That means that the prime minister was so-called Bull, and he was in fact seen as a collaborator more than most of the other, but he was the first prime minister. Then later on, it was more normal, but they had the meaning that it was not required to make a complete cleaning of the people, to separate all the bad from the good. And there was a lot of collaborators. Not as many as in Holland, I guess, but many. More or less it was money. It was not opinion, it was money. It's unbelievable what people do for money. In the defense, of course, so in the army and navy and air force, there were a few which were on the other side or had done nothing. Some of my good friends, and two of them were from Buffs. They had been educated in England and came back and by a parachute and all that. And we made a proposal for how to go to all the officers in Denmark and see what to do with him and him. So some had been on the other side, that was easy, and then some had done nothing. And so we wanted to make it up. And we were invited to a meeting in the Ministry of War. And it was a conservative Minister of War, Bjørn Kraft, upon that time. Well known and also respectable man. And there was General Goss, and the man I told you about, on the one side of the minister, and then an admiral on the other side, navy and army. And we had an old lieutenant colonel who was leader of the council upon that time, the last, before the capitulation, and he had the papers, and he mentioned what we wanted, so how to do it. This means that's a very good idea. Gus said, I will think about it. I will take it with me to my office. And the minister thinks that's a good idea. And the admiral said, I have done it already. And he had, in fact, done it. The Navy commander, he had, in fact, already cleans his people. So nothing came out of it. So later on, I was one of the first in Germany in 1947 when we had the Danish brigades in the Jever area as a part of the English Rhine Army. We took part in the occupation of Germany. I was astonished that some of the officers there was some of them we wanted to get rid of. So in fact, they came back, but to another Germany and they have reached, I guess.
Did you know the names and the individuals in the Gestapo in Copenhagen? individual Gestapo officers?
Yes, we knew most of them, yeah. I don't remember, but we knew the names and where they lived. And in fact, my last address was a place in Copenhagen where I lived on the 4th, also on the 4th of May in 1945, was in an area near the Søndermarken. And in that complex of apartments lived a lot of Gestapo officers. So I say, well, it might be a good idea to live in the middle of them. And we use a famous one, and I have people looking for some the names on also Danish criminals. Oh, yeah. And one of the more famous spies.
Did you witness any of the RAF raids on Copenhagen firsthand? Did you personally see them?
If I saw them?
Yes, the RAF raids, like the
Shell House
raid.
Yes, I saw it. I was very close to, by unfortunately or fortunately maybe, what they call it, the Svinderyggen. So it's we have some lakes in the middle of Copenhagen, and I was there for some reason, and then we heard the mosquitoes, and I saw it. And the same evening or night, I had some coming to one of my people, and we've got them to Sweden the same night by one of my routes. And I lost one of my best friends, the man who was commanding the Frederiksberg region. It was the 19th of March, and in 1945. But the German had got him when I said they had his right and took most of the leaders, and he was taken also, and he was killed, and also another one from number 4 was killed in Schillhaus. And of course, a lot more people.
Were there any other RAF raids on Copenhagen?
Yes, but that was earlier. It was against the B&V, Bomulder and Wang factory, and also a sugar. That's what they call it. Whoa. Another factory in the neighborhood. It's the sugar. Sweet.
Sugar.
Sugar, yeah, sugar. But that was in 1942, I guess, or something. Not very important. But Schellhaus, that was very important. And in fact, it was a big help for us on account of all the registration was destroyed. Plus a lot of the Germans were killed. So that was a good idea. But of course, we lost some good friends also. That was the price.
Did you listen to the BBC yourself? By radio? Did you have a radio set?
No. No, yes, I could listen to it. Oh, yes. Yes. All the time. And some of the leaders were given a battery radio, so we were not dependent on the power. So if the power went, we had the battery and could be able to hear the certain messages, which meant a lot to some people about sabotage or accident and so on. We had that. And I remember also when I was the bodyguard, the general came up to my guard room, and there was a radio with a certain frame antenna, so we could and we could move the antenna so to minimize the noise from the center, the German centers. And so we sat and tried to listen to BBC and to the information we got from there. If I was normally, I guess most Danes listen to BBC.
You know, in the French resistance, they got messages through the BBC, like cryptic or secret messages,
yes,
which had a meaning to them.
Yes, we had the same.
Such as the cat has only got three legs or something.
Yeah, we had the same. Oh, yes. Yes, yes. And that was the reason for we had these radios with batteries, so we were able to listen to that. And I remember the last one was something with Rudolf, and that meant that an action was immediately forthcoming.
You mentioned the security mistakes which led to the German arrests and success in February 1945. What were those security mistakes that were made?
The worst was that the leader, the Lieutenant Colonel, who was my commander, he had in his pocketbook, notebook, he had all the names, the real names and the addresses. That was unbelievable. Later on, there was a lot of discussion about his behavior, and he was not. He was a very good man. I liked him very much, but he was stupid in that case, no doubt. And therefore, he had also my name and address, but it was wrong. So my mother put away all photos of me, and when the Germans came, they never found any photo. And I changed my name also in 42. I had another surname, Pedersen, and you know, it's Jones and Pedersen, and that's about the same thing. And in my class, we had three Pedersens. I said, well, I must have a new name. So I changed my name. And that was also made it difficult for Germans to look for me, Bjørnsholt, and Pedersen. That was a good idea. They had problems.
Where did your mother put the photographs?
I guess she destroyed them. Probably to some to Sweden. I don't know. But when the Germans twice have been, my sister and I decided it was. I guess it was the best thing to get the parents away.
What rank in the army did you hold during the war?
First lieutenant. Then in 48, I was promoted to lieutenant captain. There was a rank we had upon that time. And then in 51, I was captain. And I was about 61 colonel, and a full colonel. And then I had all the jobs I could wish. I've been very lucky.
Did, after the war, did you help to organize a resistance veterans organization?
To organize what?
An organization of resistance veterans, people who had taken part in the resistance?
No. In fact, I just was a Norman army officer after the war. But some of the good fighters from the resistance movement. They were given a certain education and trained, and then also was promoted to some rank.
But so did they not have an organization which they
No,
formed?
No, it was dissolved completely. No, but some of my best friends, and I took care of them, so they were given training, and also they were promoted. They got my best man. He was, in fact, lieutenant colonel before I was promoted to lieutenant colonel on account he had another another line to follow. So we had the normal line of officers from school and so on, and then we had the resistant people, certain, and also political decision made it. So he was lieutenant colonel a couple of years before I became a lieutenant colonel, but it made no harm, of course. But then, they decided in the Ministry of War that all who had taken part in the resistance movement should have some notes added to their promotion papers. So, with red ink. So, I know that I had written that I had taken part so and so, two, three, four lines. And, quite helpful.
In Denmark, were there some geographical areas where the resistance was strong, and other geographical areas where the resistance was weak?
Yes, I guess it was strongest, of course, in Copenhagen. Let's say we have 10,000 to 12,000 resistance fighters in Copenhagen, and then in the whole of Denmark, you will not come up more than 70,000, I guess. So you can see you have areas with few people will, of course, have a weaker resistance. It's more difficult to hide yourself in an area with few people, a few localities and so. So therefore, it always, the greater towns, they have the most resistant people. They have a possibility to hide themselves. But in the West Coast, which in fact was locked more or less from people, so it was all this defense infrastructure was made by Germans, and they have blocked the whole area from the rest of the population. I guess we were strongest in Copenhagen, of course. It was a big town. And you have a possibility to hide yourself and to do something.
I think you've got a story from the 21st of June 1944.
Yes, you see, just before the action against the rifle syndicate, we had to get a car. And the car was ready for us in Copenhagen, a certain workshop where I had very good connection. And the problem was to enter. We just destroyed the lock. And then they had two or three big dogs, Grand Danois. And we had a lot of meat every time we came there and gave the dogs. And the problem was to get rid of the dogs. They want to follow us to get more meat, so there were not any danger to us. But we got the car, and it was put out in the northern part of Copenhagen in the Dyrehave area. It's a Tiergarten area, or they call it Dyrehave area in northern Copenhagen. And there was a summer house, and I and one of my leaders and his wife, we lived there just before the rival syndicate action had to take place. And then the owner of the summer house, who was also in connection with was it moment he came and said, well, he very much liked to have the summer house tomorrow night on account of this midsummer night. He had some little party to have there. And he said, okay, well, and we took our radio, our weapon and a car, and we found some other place for the night to come. And then on the 23rd, when he has his party, the Gestapo came and arrested the whole lot of guests. And that was a very lucky situation. We had been there on that night, if not we had got this wish from the owner of the house. So we escaped in the right due time just before. Good. Yes. I think you should know that organization of the assist movement in Copenhagen were very well organized. In fact, we had also a hospital. And an old doctor, he had a private clinic, and he was equipped with all kinds of medicine and x-rays, and we were able to take care of some of the wounded fighters. And the equipment and some of the medicine and what you need came from the Rockefeller Institute in Copenhagen, where the leader, the professor, who was, I guess, also later on a member of the council from the whole of Denmark, I had some meeting with him, and he took care of getting us all the stuff. So, in fact, we were able to do something, so not much, but we had some possibility for helping people around it during a fight. And normally, we had some private doctors to help us. For instance, my brother makes a few things. And the worst thing was when the German brought some of their prisoners around it to the Frederiksberg Hospital in Frederiksberg area. They had a certain amount of beds controlled by the Germans, and there, I guess, one or two times, it was some fighters succeeded in capturing one of the wounded of their own and getting out from the German-controlled hospital. So that was, in fact, was very brave action. I heard about it, and they went into white dress and got this fighter, this resist movement man who was badly wounded, got him out through the German control and out and away and saved his life, I guess. They had no pity, the Gestapo people. Very often they just let the body stay in the streets. And in 1944,